And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ out catching some rays to start his new year. So, primary backup.
You Nick Foles. You're Nick Foles. You're Nick Foles after a while.
I'm no longer the PBU. I'm Nick Foles. This is perfect.
You're Nick Foles. So after a while, like if you keep making relief appearances, there's going to be a conversation.
I mean, maybe Rhett should be the starter.
Right.
Like maybe right. maybe Rhett's name should be on the marquee.
Now we're
like,
now we're talking. What can we do here? The third line for that. What's up, everybody? Rhett Lewis here with my man Bucky Brooks. Excited to hang out with you here today, man, because I know you've been Bucky's wild and crazy bowl trip adventures.
All over the place. Not like it's light. It's light. Let's just say that it's light this year compared to how we used to do it, because DJ and I both would kind of split the bowls in half and go all over the place. But we took a different approach. We just kind of hit the major ones. But, man.
Yeah.
College football is crazy.
It is. And yesterday was a great day for it. We have five games yesterday.
I mean, like New Year's Day, like that is what college football is supposed to be. It's supposed to occupy the New Year's Day games. Like that's how it should be. Even the semifinals, if you ask me, they should be held on New Year's Day. There is always something. If you go back to when we were in college, like everyone always talked about wanting to play a New Year's Day Bowl. That was the big deal. And so – you know, you think about whoever doing – depending on what you did New Year's Eve, you wake up a little later, you recover while watching the early games.
The early game.
And then
it
finishes with, like, the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl or something at night. So it was a pretty good day. It was a pretty good time. I just love kind of going there and being around the atmosphere because the pageantry of it all, like the fans.
Yeah. It started off what did we get? We got Iowa, Mississippi State. Kind of started things off.
Yeah, it was early.
That was an early one. And then Kentucky. LSU and UCF.
Kentucky, Penn State was pretty good.
Right. So we'll get into all that. Let's start, though, where you started your trip, and that was at the Orange Bowl. And Alabama, man, just showing that they are a wrecking ball.
It's just unbelievable. Like, when you watch Alabama go and kind of do their work and the way they warm up, they warm up differently than other teams. Like they just like their warm-up is like a practice. It's very physical. They're getting after it. It's very organized, as you would expect under Nick Saban. But just the depth of talent that they have, you know, like you just see guy after guy after guy making plays, and you just are amazed at it. And I think the one thing that stands out, like, because there's been the conversation about whether we should go to eight teams as opposed to four teams. And I'm fine with actually eight. And I've said that I think if you take the league champions from each of the Power Five conferences, maybe take the best group of five team and then two at-large berths.
Like sure.
That's fine. But I will say those top five, six teams, they look differently than everybody else. And it's in the trenches. Their big guys look differently. They're just bigger. They're more physical. They're just different kind of specimens. And so unless you're a team that can quickly make that transition and win the recruiting battles and get some five-star guys that look like those monsters that are down in Alabama and Clemson, good luck. You have a tough time.
So where would you put this Bama team? And, you know, is this the best Bama team you've seen in person?
Man, they're different.
Tua makes. I mean, it is. It's way.
Yeah, they're different because, like, in the past, the Bama teams that you would see would be all defense.
Yep. Physical run game.
Running game.
Maybe one marquee receiver, right? Like
yes.
Julio, a
Calvin
Ridley.
We just run it, just kind of grinding it down.
Cooper. Yeah.
They beat you up in a 24-3 fashion.
Yep.
This team, I mean, the skill guys they have. They have guys all over the place running and making catches, and Jerry Jeudy, and I mean, just so many dudes are out there catching. They got tight ends, Irv Smith. Yeah. They don't even really throw him the ball. And he's like, geez.
That's what I was saying. So, like, yeah, you think back to some of the great Bama teams, and, like, you can name, like, one prolific offensive player, offensive skill player. Now we're talking Jeudy, as you mentioned, Devontae Smith, Ruggs.
Yes.
I mean, like, they just keep and they all contribute.
They all contribute.
Yeah.
The running backs. I mean, like, everyone coming to the year talked about Harris. Oh, the Harris, you know, he's going to be whatever. And then Josh Jacobs is the better back.
Yeah.
And then the guy who is the third guy, Najee Harris – is a monster who last year in the championship game, he comes in, makes a major contribution. So you're like, oh, well, this year he's going to be. and he's kind of relegated to to scrap duty. And they have so many dudes. And then you look at the quarterbacks. I mean, Tua is awesome, but then they put Jalen Hurts in, and he can make a play, and they can just do whatever they want to do. And so sometimes everyone thinks it's easy. Hey, just roll out the footballs. They have so many talent. But the way that they're able to use their guys, and you don't really hear these diva-like issues about, like, I didn't get the ball, so I'm going, and whatever. It's just a different thing. He has done a great job of creating the culture, the program, all of that. They buy into the process, the way that they talk, and then you go on defense, and what Quentin Williams is I mean, he's just wrecking shop. And you're like, where did he come from?
Kyler Murray's helmet's still upset about that hit. I mean, like, goodness. So then the Josh Jacobs run, that touchdown run, that was one of my favorite plays of bowl season. And then his story, coming from Tulsa, right, and you know, not really getting the nod there. And just
coming over, and they just find a way, and they continue to get it done. But, like, the bread and butter on defense, they have guys all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that I still wish that with Oklahoma, I would have loved to have seen a healthy Hollywood Brown play.
Yeah.
I felt like he was affected by the leg or the ankle injury. He dropped passes. He hadn't dropped passes really throughout the year. That's not really his MO. And so I would have loved to see, like, him play a fourth. I'm not saying it changes the game, but I wanted to see Oklahoma's offense at their best going against Alabama's defense at the best, because I wanted to get a true thing. And I felt like it took them about a half to kind of start playing. But then when they started playing, they did create some problems for Alabama with their tempo and the way that they played. But
it's too little too late at that point.
It's too little too late. And I think, I mean, look, it comes down to, I think there are three teams when you think about Alabama being in the mix. It's Alabama, Clemson, and then Ohio State, because I do believe, I don't know if this year's version of Ohio State, but I just believe with Urban has a way of kind of figuring out that I felt like that would have been a good match. Have we ever seen that match? Have we ever seen, like, Nick Saban and Urban?
The first year of the playoffs and Urban Meyer. Remember, it was Zeke Elliott.
Zeke
They
went
beat
nuts.
Them with Cardale Jones, and Amari
that's
Cooper
right.
had the early
that's right.
lead.
That's right.
That's the only time.
So that, like, because of that, I think those three teams, even though this year's version of Ohio State wasn't whatever, like, it's almost like, okay, like, all the other guys play, we're going to just put these four teams – in the playoff every year.
Yeah.
Now, that also was. That was Blake Sims as the quarterback of Bama.
Yeah.
So it wasn't quite Tua and Jerry Judy and
so,
those guys.
So, but, man, I would have loved, especially coming off the heels of watching the Rose Bowl. And I'm not saying Ohio State was the greatest. But, man, I would have loved to see just a coaching matchup between
I'd have loved to see Dwayne Haskins, you know, try to sit in a pocket. And,
how easy does he make it look?
50 touchdowns.
Like, how easy does he make
get
it look?
Get out of
like,
here, man.
Like, it's so easy. And I think what is happening, like, we've kind of reached the point when it comes to, like, the quarterbacks, because obviously we can talk about Tua, we can talk about Kyler Murray.
Yeah, so where does this game leave the Kyler Murray debate? Yeah, I mean, he didn't complete a pass until they were down 21-0. He had to be sacked twice before he completed
he
a pass.
Or whatever. I feel like a couple things affected Kyler Murray. Dealing with the hype of being the Heisman Trophy winner, I feel like internally there's always that thing I want to prove to everybody. I felt like the game was a little fast for him early.
Yeah.
And then it kind of settled down for him, and you could see the talent or whatever. I think he does create a dilemma for evaluators, because he's not going to fit for everybody, but you can see where his speed, as fast and as athletic as Alabama is, when he took off, he chewed up 5-10 yards in a hurry.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be interesting, because he is going to come in and measure at 5'9". He's going to be less than ideal. What do you do with him? But he will benefit from the fact that Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, some other guys that were deemed undersized have had success. And he is a guy who is a tremendous athlete. It'd just be interesting to see where he fits. And then when you go to the other side with Tua, I think the Tua conversation is going to be fascinating next year, because – Tua's one of those undersized guys. I know people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And Tua's listed at 6'1". Tua's not 6'1". Like, he's not 6'1". Like,
well, I mean, Baker at 6 foot, right?
Right, right. So the conversation, so Tua. It is always funny when we talk about, oh, you know, the size thing. I said, yeah, but when we finally measure out Tua, Tua's going to not be what we think he is. Like, he's going to be
– well, you certainly know. Having
6, maybe.
Yeah.
They let him keep his cleats on.
Well, and then the last thing, because we're going to dig into the Bama-Clemson – national championship preview tomorrow here on Move the Sticks. But quickly, how much better is Clemson's defense than Oklahoma's defense. You know what I mean? Is it 11 points better?
It's a lot better, but this game will be when you see how much they miss Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah.
So they could play.
As we said, they've got the depth to roll guys
through.
Yeah,
they could play Notre Dame without Dex, and it won't be an issue. But Alabama, and the way that they are determined to run the ball, and they run it kind of right at you, you'll begin to see – you'll feel the absence of Dexter if he's not able to play in that game, because he can control, and in my opinion, he's a better run stopper than pass rusher. And so they need him at the point of attack. You don't have him. They got the athletic guys. They got Christian Wilkins and all those other guys up front. But it's different. And so I think that is where we may see the Alabama-Clemson game look a little different, where Alabama is a little more intent and focus on running it out, because, one, they don't want Trevor Lawrence and those guys to get the ball back. But, two, I think the biggest weakness they'll see is being able to run the ball up the middle, and then on the outside, I think their corners will have some problems.
Yeah, okay. And John Parker Wilson, former Alabama quarterback, is going to hang with us on our next episode here, Move the Sticks. He does the color commentary for the Bama radio broadcast, so he'll be able to help us break that one down coming up as well. And, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but we don't know who the number one pick in this year's draft is going to be, but I feel like we know who the number one pick in the next two drafts is going to be.
Oh, you think?
I think we know already? Anyway, I won't.
You think two quarterbacks?
I think we got two quarterbacks.
Two young quarterbacks?
Let's go.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence in 2021. He's a lock.
It's set. Yeah, Tua in 2020. Come on. It's on. Let's do it.
Trevor Lawrence, would he be Bucky, if he technically was eligible this year, would he go as a top quarterback this year? I think he probably would.
That's so early. I don't want to put the Christian Hackenberg thing on him, because we've seen him or whatever. But I will say he, obviously, you saw him.
Like, he's just a step above.
You saw him at the opening when he was a high schooler, just throwing it all over. He is as talented as they come, and I don't think he's ever lost. Like, I don't think he's ever lost a game. I think in high school they won the state championship either 2 or 3 years, both they were undefeated. Yeah. Like, he's a winner. He has that stuff that everyone wants. He's big. He's pretty when it comes to the way he spins the ball. Mm-hmm. He makes those dart throws. I think the funny thing is, like, and this is why, like, Twitter is such a in-the-moment thing. Oh, my God, give it – Trevor Lawrence is crazy.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours later, Tua.
Hey.
So, but like, think about this. The next 2 years, so after you get past 2019, but 2020 with Tua and you have Herbert.
Yeah.
You have Trevor Lawrence.
Well,
you have all these young –
Trevor won't be ready in 2021. It'll be 2021.
21, but over the next 2 years, you just talk about all the young
quarterbacks
that are coming through the pipeline.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a fascinating time.
Well, who knows? By 2021, there may not be any room for a traditional pocket passer in the NFL. I mean, we don't know. You know, this could all be running triple options. I don't know, but I just think
The game is in really good hands with, like, the guys that are kind of coming through. And we're seeing these young quarterbacks get on the field and play right away. I think some of that is, a credit to the college coaches being able to be adaptable to kind of get those guys up to speed. And I think the more that happens at the lower levels, the more NFL teams are going to be under the gun to figure out a way to get their young quarterbacks to play good immediately. Yeah.
Okay, so let's stick right there with the quarterbacks and right there with the New Year's Day bowls. And, Kent, what you got on Dwayne Haskins?
Yeah, I was at the Rose Bowl about 8 rows behind the Ohio State sideline there, and you get to sort of see the team and how they react around him, and also just how Haskins plays. And he is unafraid in the pocket. You see the pocket collapse sometimes, and I like how he stays there. He doesn't get happy feet. He doesn't shift out of the pocket. We know he's not the runner some of these other guys are, but I love how he just stands in the pocket and gets the ball to where it needs to go. And he missed a few throws yesterday, but that Washington secondary is arguably the best in the country. And he was still outstanding. I was very impressed. I got to see Herbert in last year's bowl game against Boise, and I know it was a different time, and Herbert's going to be much better.
But it's the same, though.
But Haskins is much better in terms of staying in the pocket and not getting happy feet. He delivers. At this point, he's better than Herbert now.
Which was funny, right? So it was funny because, like, anyone who had paid attention to the Herbert conversation throughout the fall, everyone just kind of assumed that he would be the number one guy. But when you really watched him coming off the heels of the Boise State game, you want to see him make some improvement. And I will say, look, 6'6", he's super athletic. He has a ton of talent. But I watched him against Michigan State at the Red Box Bowl, and it was just a little windy. But, man, I was like, man, like for a high-level quarterback.
The Stanford game, late in the game, he did not deliver in that game.
For like a high-level quarterback, you're like, wow. And then you're watching Haskins, and I think the way Ken described it, it was so easy for him. Like, he never appeared rattled. He never appeared, like, off schedule. It was just like, oh, okay, yeah, I might have missed one. But his misses were more to – as an evaluator, they're more surprised than the expectation. Like everything else, he's throwing these deep corners to Paris Campbell.
Yeah.
He's hitting guys in stride. And, I mean, I don't know. I know he's only played, like they'll say, like 15 starts. But I think in yesteryear, like, he's a prototypical quarterback. The hardest thing that I'm trying to come up with is, what is this comparable? Like, what is this comp? Because it's not Big Ben.
Right.
It's not
– for Haskins?
Yeah. It's not – Jameis, it's not one of those things. Like, who do you compare to? And then when you start thinking in the league, when you start having your Rolodex go through the starting quarterbacks in the league,
yeah,
it's like much. And so I didn't want to put this on him, but I was like, man, the way that he is easy and comfortable in the pocket, it's kind of like Tom Brady is. But you never want to say, you never want to say, hey, this guy's like Tom Brady. But the way that he plays in the pocket, I'm like,
it's kind of
Tom Brady-ish.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because he doesn't run. So it'll be interesting. I can't wait when other guys kind of weigh in. They begin to throw those comps out there because there are not many in the league that currently play like he plays.
That's a good point. So 533 attempts this year for Haskins, 50 touchdowns. Herbert, given a little different in how they do things on offense, 404 attempts, 29 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
Not bad, but like, so then what you would do, like the natural comparison is, hey, how did Herbert play against this Washington secondary?
Yeah, against the – right. Against,
versus how did Haskins play?
Yep, and common opponents.
Right, and then just because you're trying to get a feel for like, oh, okay, this is how they played or whatever. The other guy that recently announced that would be interesting, Jones from Duke.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones. Like, so he decides to come out.
Yeah.
And you've already begun –
yeah, because the numbers aren't there for him.
No, but
not even anywhere near, right. You know, Haskins.
He can run, though. He's a good athletic runner.
So then the conversation has been, oh, he's like Carson Wentz. And so then you're like, ooh, man, that's we're putting a lot on. Okay. And so he has an injury history, but he's a good kid. We interviewed him a few weeks ago on the podcast. And look, he's everything that you want. And then you have the tutelage under David Cutcliffe.
Right.
But – you're trying to figure out, like, okay, what are the signature games?
Yeah.
Who's he play with? Like, what are we going to put him up against, and how do we compare him to, like, a Haskins if Haskins comes out and some of the other guys? And then the other guys, like Drew Locke had a pretty decent game over the last couple of days. Missouri, Oklahoma State, even though they lost. But you can see his natural talent. And then when you dig into his background and you find out that he was a big-time basketball player who hadn't really played a lot of quarterback in high school or whatever, like he spent all of his time like hooping and being on the AAU circuit. And so what is his growth potential and what could he be? And, you know, so you take all of that and you take the lessons from last year's class.
Right.
Because I think the thing that I'm realizing, guys don't change. Like Josh Allen is the same way
as Josh Allen. Yeah.
He doesn't change. So, all right, this is who Josh Allen is. We like Josh Allen. What are we going to do to put Josh Allen in the best?
How do we change? Right? Not how do we get him to change.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's Lamar Jackson from Louisville. Doesn't really throw the ball well outside the numbers.
Right.
Dynamic runner. Can throw the ball inside on in-breaking routes and make plays. You look at Baltimore. Baltimore's run 6 out of their last 7. When you turn on the tape, it's like, oh, Lamar Jackson doing Louisville stuff. So as we get down the line with all these quarterbacks and we're going to find the flaws, the trick is going to be like, yeah, those are the things that he can do, but here's what he can do. And which is the guy that we feel like we can help him do what he does the best with what we already have.
Right. What the Patriots have been doing for years now.
It's so crazy.
Putting guys in the best position to succeed.
That's and the pressure just ramps up because now coaches have to play young players and win.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we are long past the time where a rookie – highly drafted quarterback will buy you 3 years. it may buy you three games. You know, like that. We've seen that with the whole Mariota Winston thing. I mean, both those guys' head coaches were gone within a year.
Yeah.
So you go back even that far, but yeah. So that is how accommodating can you be, and still
Baker
successful?
Mayfield. Baker Mayfield extends the conversation because like Hugh lasted however many games, 4, 5, 6 or whatever. Yeah. Baker Mayfield goes on, sets a new NFL record for rookie touchdown passes. He gets the right coordinator. They kind of build it around them. They go 7-8-1, and they look like a completely different squad. So now the expectation is, yeah, I hear you, but we take a quarterback high. We still should be able to win some games while he's learning.
Yeah.
You look at Josh Allen. He finishes with a great performance his final week against Miami. He runs around and makes plays and does all this stuff. And, yeah, they only win 5 or 6 games on the year. But you see the potential. So it is.
Their leading rusher. He leads the league in quarterback rushing touchdowns.
And we didn't really talk about that part.
Not enough. Not nearly enough.
We talked about him being athletic and, oh, he can make some gunslinger plays. But you could argue that the best part of Josh Allen's game, his rookie season, was his athleticism and scrambling ability and his ability to make these spectacular throws.
Yeah. Yeah. And just finally on that conversation, because I'm curious now, 52% completion.
That's who he is.
That's what he was.
He's never going to be like
70%. He's never going to be Drew Brees like.
Oh, and even like when the Carolina Panthers, and the reason I compare him to Cam Newton a lot is because I felt like the guys in Buffalo who had came over from Carolina could see the similar traits that he would offer in terms of his ability to run the ball, his ability to push the ball down the field. And even though he was not going to be a 60% passer, they saw that Cam Newton was able to get them to a Super Bowl not being that, and they could find a way. So now you think, okay, give him a couple speed receivers, give him a legitimate line, running game.
Yeah.
He's going to short hop some throws. Yeah. And you just kind of – it's all those things where you're practicing. If you can imagine being the coach and you call the play and you see him short hop, you just go, all right. So then we'll just go to the next play.
If he keeps his turnovers to single digits, they're going to be in every game. If they continue to surround him with some talent and because they played pretty good on defense last year anyway.
And the one thing that I didn't give him enough credit, he's competitive. He's super competitive. And I think you can win with a guy who is competitive and has some spunk to him, and he has the talent that he has. But I just believe, like, guys buy into the manly man. Like, he's a manly man. He's a man's man. He
will be
that.
A god in Buffalo, like, if he continues on this trajectory, because I feel like they relate to this dude. They love his energy. They love,
hard work and blue collar.
That's a hockey
scrapper.
Town.
It is.
If you can bust a tooth, you're going to go up in terms
and
of
he
how
has,
fans
and he
love
embraced
it.
And you see his
comes back,
interaction.
The elbow, the whole
his
thing.
His interactions with the fans. And look, he does it in his own thing. And I think what we have to do is, like, we have this view or vision of how we want our quarterbacks to be. And then you just looking like
this year was the,
all those quarterbacks are different, and in their own right, they all had success. And so you have to be a little more adaptable and creative with, like, okay, all right, this is the guy we got. This is what we're going to do.
So speaking of competitiveness, how about Sam Ehlinger last night?
Oh,
Sugar Bowl. You were there. You saw it in person.
Oh, this dude.
Tell me about him.
I think before the lead up to the game, you're looking at the story, and you talk about a kid that grew up just wanting to be a Longhorn. Like, they got those little pictures of him.
Yeah, you saw that.
The baby, he got the hook'em horns on and doing all this other stuff, and you're like, man, this dude is all in. But before I even talk about him, did you see Bevo go after the little dog?
Oh, my goodness.
Did you see Bevo?
How is Ugga still alive? Ugga's the biggest winner of both season for still having a heartbeat.
Bevo just wigged out.
He did not want any of that.
Unbelievable. And so I'm watching the game, and I'm watching Ehlinger. And the thing is, like, you're looking at Texas, and you can tell, like, here's the thing about the bowl game. And I knew this in picking teams. Always pick the team that is more motivated to be there. You can see very early with the fans, Texas wanted to knock off Georgia because to them that would signal that they were back. It was a big deal. I felt like Texas fans outnumbered the Georgia fans in attendance. Like,
did
this,
they?
I felt like when you just look around.
Georgia fans usually show up pretty well.
And they showed up, but I felt like Texas had their stuff out. They wanted to poke their chest out. Yep. And it was a big deal. And at the beginning of the game, you could just see the intensity, the physicality, the way they were into it. I was like, man, Texas is really into this game.
You saw Ellinger afterwards. We're back.
Oh, man.
Are they back? Is Texas back?
I think they could be back because I think they have a ton of guys that potentially could return. It puts more pressure on them. They won five games this year against ranked opponents. Look, the kid is scrappy. He's tough. He scored three touchdowns. They do all this stuff. They let everybody move the ball all the way down the field. They get inside the five. It's Ellinger time. Like, he is going to run the quarterback power. It is – he's not Tebow.
Rushing touchdowns, right?
He's not Tebow, but it's Tebow-like. He's running quarterback power over and over and over again. And I told you the story before we started the podcast. He was one of the Elite 11 finalists a couple years ago. I had my team. I had Tua as my quarterback. And we ended up winning the deal, and we beat his team. And I cannot remember who the starting quarterback was, but Ellinger didn't start. And we mollywopped him. We're rolling through
38-0 at halftime.
I mean, it's not even close. And so he comes up, and he comes in the second half. He makes a little run, scores a couple touchdowns. He's like, as he is, competitive. And he comes over to me, like, because we're about to get the hats and all that. He's like, man, you're just lucky I didn't play. And I laugh.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, this is just a little cocky dude just kind of talking. But now you fast forward to now and you watch him. And I was like, oh, that's really who he is. Like, his toughness, his competitiveness, his grit is really what he's all about. And it's going to give him a chance. Now, I don't know if he's necessarily a pro quarterback or whatever, but I do know he's tough and scrappy. And the same traits I see in him were the same traits that I see when I look at Trace McSorley come back in the game. I'm like, no, what is Trace doing?
Yeah.
He comes back, and you can see how important it is to him. And I think when we're looking for guys, like, part of what we're doing is we want guys that are all in, that we feel like it is really important, it matters to them. And I can say with Ellinger, with McSorley, those guys, whether they ever become frontline players, you're going to feel their presence on the field, and that's what you always want.
PJ Locke, DB from Texas, after the game says, I'm going to speak for the Big 12. There's a misconception saying the Big 12 is soft. We played more physical than an SEC team. That's clear cut. You agree?
They did
on
play
that day.
They did play SEC-like.
Yeah.
And in looking at the body types, Texas is not quite to Georgia's level with their offensive and defensive linemen.
Georgia was missing a couple of guys.
Yeah. But physically, you could squint and be like, yeah, I can see some of the size. I can see how they do it. I can see how they're running. I think Tom Herman, after the game, the way that he talked, he said, you know, the one thing, we're not where we want to be, so we have to play physical.
Yeah.
We have to do – which I thought was – and in fact, I had a conversation with my dad. I was like, what does that mean, though? So we're not where we want to be, so we're going to beat you up. So now when they get to where they are, they're going to change their style.
Yeah, change like, what got you it, there? Right,
it,
I know.
It was just different, but – I heard him say it, so you could tell that there was an emphasis on.
Well, and then in that same quote at the very end, after answering that question, at the very end, he said, but that's who we're always going to be. You know, so, like, I see what you're saying. I was like, gosh, well, so you're just going to abandon this once you figure it all out.
And I think for an offensive dude,
yeah,
that's a little different because that's more of a, like, a coach from a defensive background, like, hey, we're going to beat you up. We're going to take you in the streets and kind of wear you out. Whereas he wants to see, like, maybe an aesthetically pleasing offense where it's pretty, the ball's going all over, we're scoring, like, 40 and 50 points. But I think he is understanding that if we play this way, it gives us an opportunity to win. And I think they'll be even more emboldened to play like that after knocking off of Georgia. Now, the trick is, I think they play LSU the second week of the season next year.
They do.
So that we're back and the thing.
We'll see, because Joe Burrow will be back and he had a game for himself.
Talking about getting smacked.
Yeah, and he got beat up pretty good.
He got beat up pretty good, but he responded. And I didn't notice because I came in on that game late. I didn't know that UCF jumped out on him first.
Yeah, 14-3, right?
Yeah, I didn't know that they jumped out on him. And then they had to come back and then – the like, but
17, yeah. Then,
it's funny, like, because the UCF thing to me, I was like, man, because you look at them, you're like, they can't play with those big teams. Like,
kind of kept hanging around though,
right? And
yeah.
And then you wonder, man, if they had their quarterback,
if McKenzie was there, then what?
See, yeah. Because I saw them the year before I was at the Peach Bowl when they beat up Auburn, and I was like, I mean, Auburn's not playing. Like,
they're not into it. Yeah,
they got to plan around with them, and then you look at this game. And you feel like LSU is dominating. Because everything says the numbers on the page. You're like, man, but they're a touchdown away from coming back.
And LSU was down, you know, Greedy.
Oh,
didn't
play. Greedy. Like some of their guys didn't play.
Got ejected. And, yeah. So that is a good conversation and probably one for another day. But, yeah, losing, you know, on that stage probably doesn't help the whole, you know, we're national champions talk and all that.
No, but the fact that they were competitive, I think it kind of makes it well.
Yeah, it makes you think. It makes you think.
And maybe the next time, if they're close when it comes to playoff selection, because they have played two SEC teams in bowl games and have been able to win and then hold their own, maybe the perception begins to change a little bit.
Okay, so I got a couple observations that I had just watching, you know, kind of the entirety of bowl season. If I want to open the floor to you for anything that comes up. So let me ask you something. Watching the Kentucky game yesterday, is there going to be a Josh Allen drafted higher than last year's Josh Allen?
Maybe so, because he put on a show.
Three sacks against Penn State?
He had
a block kick too, right?
Man, he was all over the place. And when you watch him run around and the way that he makes movements.
Talking about the Kentucky linebacker,
Kentucky linebacker Josh Allen, he may be the guy that jumps up the boards more than any other prospect in terms of how he started at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
To how he's going to
finish.
Seven sacks last four games. Did it on a major stage against Penn State, and you can see the athleticism. You saw the ability to kind of change directions, his hand skills. He's an interesting guy, and he plays so hard.
Yeah.
The holder is nonstop. You have to like him, and also out of the game, you got to like the running back, Snell.
He 26 for 144 and two touchdowns.
I mean, when they needed him, he put him on his back, made some plays, ran the ball. The thing with running backs now, though, you have to be able to go back and say, can they impact the passing game? Because the guys that we're seeing that have been taken up top the last couple of years, with the exception of Leonard Fournette, and now the things are out about Leonard Fournette, but Zeke Elliott, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley, they all have been able to be significant contributors in the passing game, catching the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah. So, okay, a couple more for me. And this one, this, you know, I remember these two guys popping out to me when Iowa beat the brakes off my Hoosiers in a regular season. And then watching them play against Mississippi State yesterday, Fant may be one of the best tight end prospects, maybe the best tight end prospect in the draft this year. He didn't play, but TJ Hockenson.
How can you have two tight ends?
How do you have two like that?
How could you possibly have two tight ends that made?
That was the Mackey Award winner, and then the best tight end prospect in the draft didn't play. I don't know how you get two guys like that, but I love Hockenson. I don't know if he comes out this year, but
maybe. Why not?
Like at this point, I don't know if your stock's going to be any higher.
So, I mean, like you have two tight ends that you can play. Like, Fant doesn't do it, but you got two legitimate guys that can play. He is what we call a Y tight end, meaning a true tight end, meaning he can block in line in the run game. Yeah. He can run
feels
routes.
Feels a little bit like Vance McDonald to me.
Yeah, like he can make plays. He can do those things. He is not what we call like those – like last year we talked about Gesicki. Yeah. Like, he's not one of those guys that's an oversized jumbo wide receiver.
Yeah, he's not Evan Engram, right.
He's a legitimate tight end, and it's hard to find those guys. And then you have, like, technically a former Iowa Hawkeye in George Kittle goes and sets the record. And then we always have said that Stanford is the place that produces tight end, but now do we need to look back at Iowa?
Back at Iowa. Tight end,
do we look at Iowa? Dang. Like, I mean, I know they don't have Hayden Fry and the stand-up tight end like they used to.
Yeah.
But
all right, so that's one. I love that dude. He's a fun guy to watch. And then Amani Hooker was won the best DB in the Big Ten award. He was the best player on the best scoring defense in the Big Ten this year. He ended up starting at strong safety and then gets moved to outside linebacker. He's like 6'1", 210. So now he becomes one of those guys, and I think he was a true junior this year, so I don't know where he is.
But he becomes one of those guys that is kind of like –
it's kind of the all the rage now.
All the rage. Yeah. Kind of like the way we've seen the LA Chargers use Derwin James and move him around and drop him in the box 1 week. The next
tackles
week
like a high. Freight train.
I mean, just all of those things. And so – the more that you can do, and as this game kind of shifts and we're seeing more people spread it out on offense, you have to have the right personnel to combat that on defense, the more that you can do, the flexibility, the versatility that you display in your background, it really, really matters.
Yeah. So those are a couple of things that stood out to me. Anything else, any other guys or
No, I just think, you know, everyone will talk about this draft class featuring a bunch of defensive players, and the skill guys won't necessarily be up to snuff, but there's some talented guys. It's just not the front, the high-end talent. Not like we've seen in the last couple of years where we see a skill guy make the top five or top ten. Right. I don't think that happens, but I think it's the usual suspects. I think you see big boys up front go. You'll see the off-the-ball linebackers like the Devin Whites and
They'll
those
get a
guys
little higher.
Go.
Yeah.
You'll see a couple of DBs kind of sprinkling there in the mids. And then you'll begin to see the offensive skill guys go. I think the skill part of the draft from an offensive standpoint, that occurs from 25 to 40. That's when you'll see it kind of populated with the pass catchers and some of the runners. But early in the draft, I think it's going to be the defensive guys.
All right. And again, we'll take a closer look at the national championship preview in our next episode. Let's kick it out to the NFL wildcard weekend here. We're going to kick it off down in Houston. Rubber match between the Colts and Texans. They split the regular season series. Both teams won on the road in the regular season series. As a matter of fact, Texans started their win streak against Indy and then in week four, and then Indy ended it in week 14. So, Buck, to me, for the Texans, it's how do we protect Deshaun Watson and how do we get after Andrew Luck? But floor is yours on that one.
No, I think that is very much the case. You got to make sure that Deshaun Watson is protected, because when Deshaun Watson is protected, he's able to find DeAndre Hopkins.
Or is he just on the move a bunch in this one?
You know, he has to empty it out. The one thing about Deshaun Watson, and this will be his first playoff game, but everyone, and going all the way back to his high school years, what he did at college at Clemson, he loves the big stage. He loves the moment. These are the kind of moments that are built for him. I would look for him to really lean on DeAndre Hopkins, who right now is playing like the best receiver in football. I don't know how you cover him, how you slow him down. But I think for the Colts are well positioned to go on the road and get a win because, yes, you have Andrew Luck, but I think they're playing the right way.
They are.
They're running the football. They put multiple tight ends on the field. Eric Ebron has become a legitimate red zone weapon defensively. Matt Eberflus has done a great job of getting this team to kind of buy into this. I mean, they would call it the Tampa 2 system, but, man, they just play hard. They run to the football. They're fast. They're physical. They've been getting turnovers. You have Darius Leonard in the middle of that defense. You have Malik Hooker in the back end. You know, the no-names, they're just making plays. And so this is a very, very tough game for the Houston Texans because I don't know if the Texans can run the ball. If they can't run the ball, they are playing into the hands of that defense. And even the game that the Texans won, some would say that that was a gift because Frank Wright went for it on fourth down. Say he doesn't make those kind of decisions in this game, can the Texans knock them off? Can they knock off the hottest team or one of the hottest teams in football in the Colts, who've won 9 of the last 10?
Neither of these two teams ran the ball particularly well in either matchup. Matter of fact, Andrew Luck threw for 863 combined yards in both of these matchups. Now, the Texans secondary, you know, not the best in the league. Kareem Jackson's been playing really well all year long, but they've been banged up. So, I mean, to me, you have to get pressure in this game if you're Houston.
They have to get pressure. And ideally, they would like to be able to get pressure with J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney.
D.J. Reader.
And, like if they can get pressure without having to commit extra bodies to it, then it allows them to play in max coverage and prevent the explosive plays. The thing that you're noticing about Andrew Luck, no one is doing play action as effective as he is. Like, the averages in play action in terms of yards per attempt, he's averaging 9.9 yards per attempt. Like, that is plus 3 over what he's doing when they just do traditional dropbacks. So when you look at the Colts this weekend, you'll notice when they throw quick, they spread you out.
Yeah.
When they take shots, it is full flow play action.
Yeah. I'm excited to watch that one. I think it's going to be great. I think it's fun when we get teams that can, you know, they get to face off against each other 3 times in a year. Certainly puts a little strain and on the creativity for both of the game planners in this game on both sides of the ball. So that'll be fun to watch later in the day. The nightcap, 8:15 Eastern time.
Oh man!
Talk about two teams that appear very similar. Both want to run the ball. Both want to play really good physical defense. It's the Seahawks visiting the Cowboys. Also a rematch, but neither of these teams look anything like they did in Week 3. I mean, you know, Earl Thomas was still playing for the Seahawks team in Week 3.
Yeah.
No Amari Cooper for the Cowboys back then. So how do you see this one, this go-round, Buck?
You know, this is a man, it's so many interesting storylines in this game. You talk about two teams that want to run the ball. No one runs it more than the Seattle Seahawks. Number one ranked running game in terms of percentage. They do it over. Chris Carson has become their bell cow. They haven't really used Russell Wilson, but now in the playoffs, I would think you would see Russell Wilson is kind of like the X factor.
Great X factor,
in the running game. He has 35 touchdowns. That is tied for third most in the National Football League. No one even talks about that. So they have been able to use him less but get more production, which is exactly what you want.
Yeah.
And then when you go to the Cowboys, Zeke Elliott's everything. Zeke Elliott is a guy who said, look, I'm ready for a heavy workload. We saw in week 16, he had 40 touches. I don't know if it's going to take that. But then in week 17, we saw Dak kind of find his game because he played without a lot of guys. And so this is a tough game because Seattle is going to take away Zeke Elliott. They're going to put the game on Dak's shoulders, and he has to be able to win in the passing game. And they got to be able to get explosive play opportunities to Amari Cooper. But this game really comes down to me, Chris Richard going back to play his old team.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of intel, what kind of notes does he have on Russell Wilson based on all of those OTA practices, all those training camp, competitive matches that they do? They like to always compete, go one-on-one. What does he have in his bag of tricks to deal with Russell Wilson? Because that is the key. Because I believe the Cowboys' defense is better than Seattle. Seattle has the edge, obviously, in quarterback play. Zeke Elliott in that running game, it kind of washes out. It comes down to turnovers and explosive plays, and where can they generate them?
Yeah, and the Seahawks offense turns it over fewer than anybody in the league. Which number one in turnovers. They have the exactly fewest turnovers in football this year.
Exactly how you want to play.
Yep.
And then the Cowboys win when Dak Prescott doesn't turn it over.
Right.
They win games. So the premium is on don't turn the ball over.
And can they take advantage of red zone opportunities when they do get there? They struggled with that for really the entirety of the season. So that's something to watch for as well. But, man, this is going to be a physical game. It's in Dallas, or it's in Arlington. You know, it's not in Seattle. So you wonder, you know, does the Seahawks team bring the same game?
I mean, they obviously play differently when they're playing in front of the 12s.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of pressure on the Cowboys in this game because Jason Garrett has never won a postseason match.
Right.
There's always pressure on Dak Prescott. He is subject to evaluation each and every week. This playoff game puts more on him. The best thing that could happen for the Cowboys is Zeke Elliott has a big game. And then it makes everything flow easier, smoother when it comes to that. But I think I'm leaning towards the Cowboys win this just because I believe their defense is better. But really, of all the games, both games that we have on Saturday are coin flips. They can go either way. I wouldn't be surprised if any of those four teams, like with any of those teams, whatever the results are, if they advance.
I think if I recall right, I picked Houston in the first one, and I picked the Seahawks in the second one, just because if all of the things are equal, I think Russell Wilson is the edge over Dak Prescott.
And that's where it comes down to. It comes down to quarterback play. Like in the tournament, you typically go with the best quarterback. And so Russell Wilson would certainly be the guy that gives them the edge. The thing would be, can this team travel and get the same kind of performance on their guys? And how will they hold up on the outside against Amari Cooper?
I'm with you, man. This is good stuff.
Real good.
This was fun. This is a good one.
Nick Foles
sitting in for DJ
Nick Foles
here.
Super Bowl MVP.
Don't even come back, man. Here we go.
He's on a hot streak.
Keep going. Yeah, here it is. All right, man. That was fun. Looking forward to previewing the national championship game in our next episode and the Sunday wildcard weekend matchups. As always, check out NFL.com, MTS Video, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, leave a review, do the whole deal. Download MTS, and we'll see you next time. All right, Buck. See you, man.
Later.